Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
To infinity and beyond. It's a space day on the IGN UK podcast. Of course, we're going to be talking all about Starfield, because why wouldn't we? It's a big game, and a couple of us have been playing it. We'll also talk about the One Piece anime adaptation on Netflix. Matt will talk about that. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great, mate. I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.
Oh, a bit of Taylor Swift to kick things off. And it's always a treat. It's a rare treat. But we do have Jen on the podcast this week, because you've also been playing a lot of Starfield, as have I.
I have, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You've put in, what, almost 50
oh
hours?
Oh my God. Yeah, but so many of that is just me, like...
You've just been put on blast around. Immediately. I thought we weren't going to talk about our account.
No. I've played just over 20, but yeah, you've done at least double than me. But you do have a good reason, because I don't envy you at all. Sorting out guides on this must be a nightmare.
Yeah, there's been so much to go through, and the game like basically explains nothing to you. So it's just that's my job, is explaining things.
Which specific area of the guides have you been working on, or kind of a bit of everything?
Pretty broad. I mean, my main role is going to be like looking at what people are searching now that the game's out. But prior to launch, I was like, okay, I'm going to dig into looking at outposts. I'm going to try and like figure out how to set up the best outpost on the planet and get like all these systems optimized. Can't do that. You need to like invest quite a lot of levels.
You do need, and that's, we'll get to that. There's a lot you can do in this game, but so much of it is inhibited by which skills you decide to pick, and you don't get skill points that often. So if you do want to be a big outpost builder, you have to kind of think about that from minute one in the game, except it doesn't tell you that from minute one in the game. So you can be hours deep into this game and realize, oh, I'm going to need to play another 10 hours to actually build a good outpost.
Yeah, as somebody that produces these guides, do you have like a 50-50 as like a guides person, as a player, when you play a game and it doesn't explain anything, are you like, oh, this is going to do really good traffic, or are you frustrated as a person playing it?
Yes and yes. I think it's like, wow, this is a wonderful opportunity to help people, and also, oh God, I've got to figure out how this works.
Yeah, nice.
So it's fun. Yeah.
I haven't built a single outpost in the 20 odd hours I've played, so I maybe I'll look at that guide in like another 50 hours time. But I'm sure, do you know what? I'm sure it's a fantastic guide once it's fully
we
done.
We have many other helpful guides as well.
We do. I looked at our shipbuilding one yesterday, because the shipbuilding can be a little complicated in this game. Before we do get into the actual all of the little things you can do in this game, if you don't know what Starfield is, it's Bethesda's latest RPG. It's their first new IP, if you want to use that term, in 25 years. And I couldn't have been more excited for this game. It's like my dream game. When you like come up with an idea for a game, it's like massive RPG in space, explore thousands of planets. And do you know what? I've been playing it And especially last night, it got its hooks in me. I couldn't stop playing. Sometimes it does feel like that dream game to me, but far too often it's just frustrating. And that's kind of my, like, I'll go into more detail about what I think about different parts of this game, but like, what's your overall impression so far, Jen, of Starfield?
Yeah, honestly, it's pretty similar. I mean, I was thinking about this. It's the whole premise of the game being like an open world RPG, like by Bethesda, set in space. It's kind of so many people's dream games. You have the kind of like imagination gap, right, where people like fill in the gaps of what they don't know yet about the game with, like, I can imagine it being everything I ever wanted. And there's all these systems in the game that seem like super exciting, like, you know, like ship combat and ship designing and outpost building and recruiting a crew and, you know, having companions and all this kind of stuff. But I feel like I kind of had this concept of how much fun it would be to explore all these things, and then that wasn't actually the case in game, but it was fun for like other reasons. So I kind of had to let go of my imagined like ideal game that I kind of wanted it to be, and then what it actually ends up being is pretty fun.
I think you really, I've almost been going through the same sort of thought process I did with Cyberpunk. Like, in my head, Cyberpunk was going to be this revolutionary, incredible thing, whereas in fact that was kind of Fallout in a cyberpunk city. And what I've kind of come to terms with Starfield is that I thought it'd be this huge revolutionary thing, and it is Fallout in space. But for better and worse, because I like Fallout a lot. And once I come to the terms with, okay, this isn't endless exploration. For a game that kind of, the premise is exploration, you don't do that much exploring, because the planets that aren't like tailored with cool stuff on, there isn't really much to find, so there's no point exploring. You're kind of just, I've kind of described it as more you're visiting places. You'll spend like 20-30 minutes in a place, do some missions, then go to another place for 20-30 minutes and do some stuff, and then go back to those places, rather than spend, I don't know, 10 hours in one place kind of like looking for secrets. It's kind of a bit like that. I think you're kind of doing almost doing space tourism than you are space exploration.
Yeah, I completely agree. I actually like made a note that was really similar to that, which was like,
I'm sorry, I stole your
no, it's a good thing that we agree. Yeah, like the way that like planets work and exploring planets work is that you can kind of just choose a landing spot on a planet, and it like generates kind of the local area around you, and there are things that you can find there, but they're not necessarily unique, and there are unique like waypoints and points of interest on planets that are more like in-depth that you can kind of discover. Like I found a couple of them, like, I don't know, like abandoned factories or like research outposts that actually have their own little stories that you can piece together through like reading data logs and things like that, which does actually feel like you're exploring something. You're like discovering, you know, like a scene of a disaster or some kind of like conspiracy, or there's something going on here that you're like uncovering, which is a really nice feeling. But there's like just not as much of that as I would have liked, especially because it feels like it's not like you're wandering through like the forest in Oblivion or Skyrim and like coming across a shrine or whatever. It's like you've just landed on this planet and you've like pointed at the thing and being like, take me there, and you've just gone right there. So it doesn't feel like it's like the wilderness. It's more kind of like, ego.
Yeah, it's like half of these planets are kind of cool, like feel like you're playing Fallout, and then half of them kind of feel like you're playing No Man's Sky, but No Man's Sky at day one, not No Man's Sky the good game it is now. You're kind of just going to a planet and scanning rocks or plants, and you leave and you're like, cool.
I did find last night I was on a planet and I found invisible dinosaurs.
What?
Which was cool.
Are they meant to be invisible?
I don't know. I was thinking, is this, that's the problem. I'm like, is this a bug? I was like, hey, this is so cool. I'm like scanning them.
How did you know they were dinosaurs?
Well, they're not really dinosaurs, but they look a lot like dinosaurs, you know?
Okay.
But they look invisible. That's...
No, they like shimmer. There was like a shimmer. But you have a scanner, which you'll need to use like all the time, basically. And I pointed the scanner at these like shimmers, and the outline I could see is like this big dinosaur creature.
Presented a like if a tree falls in a woods situation. Like if a dinosaur's invisible, is it still a dinosaur?
Yeah, it's interesting. What the, like, let's go back to the start. What sort of character did you build? Because the characterization is quite cool. I don't know what you went for, Jen. Did you go for, are you trying to be a good person in this galaxy?
I'm in every galaxy. Yeah, I'm trying to be a good person. Yeah, no, I meant I like probably 2 hours in the character creator, because there's a lot you can do just making a face. So pretty proud of my character. But I went for like my background is sculptor, which is a really weird thing to choose. Yeah. I don't know, like the intro of the game sets you up where you're like, you're a miner doing mining. And so I was thinking, okay.
Oh, you need the rocks. Yeah,
I need the rocks for my sculptures. Like, this makes sense. To be honest, I was just going through like the associated skills, and I wanted persuasion, and I also wanted medicine, and that had both of them. I was like, sure, why not? I'll be a sculptor.
That's very similar.
Why does a sculptor need medicine? In case of,
I don't know, chisel yourself.
Oh yeah,
exactly. You need to, you know, like rocks could like fling off and just kind of scrape you.
Sculptors don't get a lot of credit for it being a dangerous career. We need to respect the sculptors.
I kind of did a similar thing. I went for the space scoundrel. You know, maybe they had a previous life of crime. I don't know. As I've said before on this podcast, Robin is hot. You know, if you're Robin, you're hot. You're gonna.
I was like,
you know.
Who's Robin?
Yeah, no, from Batman.
if you're Robin, places
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, exactly. But I again mainly picked it because of the starter traits, because I wanted persuasion and I also wanted piloting, and that has both of those. Because I'm basically, my idea of playing this game is build cool ships, fly around and talk to everyone and try and charm them. That's how I go through life every day, really. So that's what I was trying to do. And I've basically I'm playing as basically Han Solo. It's like I'm a former, you know, cheeky chappy who's kind of got involved in like a something grander, like a bigger cause, which is kind of what this game thrusts you into. This is all in the very first mission of the game. I'm not spoiling anything here by saying, basically, as Jen said, you start off as a miner, you find an artifact which looks like nothing you've ever seen before. You touch it, you get these weird sort of visions, and then you're kind of asked to go meet this explorer group called Constellation, who are basically like, we've been hunting these artifacts. We don't know what they are, but they're key to something. And then that basically starts your main quest, is finding more of these artifacts. And I've been doing it like in my 20 hours, I've probably spent a third of that maybe on the main quest. And there is some good stuff down there. I will say my favorite stuff so far is some of the faction stuff, which is what Fallout's always done well. I think that's when this game's at its best, is its faction and its side quests. I don't know if you found that, Jen, or if you've been too busy building outposts to engage in them.
Well, that's what I did initially. I was kind of just like investigating everything and trying to dig into everything. And then I kind of, I came up against this wall where you do need to invest a bunch of points to unlock anything. Mm-hmm. And then I was finding that I was picking everything up and my inventory is full all the time.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I've got a paragraph written about the inventory later.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But it was just frustrating. And I was like, okay, I need more materials and I need more money and I need like a bigger cargo hold and I need better like shields on my ship. Otherwise I'm getting like dumpstered every time I try and go to a different planet. So then I started playing through the main story quest, and I think it's cool. Like, it's a weird kind of society that you're a part of, like this constellation group of kind of feels like intellectuals, you know, you're like in this library or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know if my character wants to hang, like, whatever, you know.
They're a sculpture. They're all sculptures, intellectuals. I don't know. Maybe I'm a shaman.
I wouldn't like to say. I don't know why.
You got to know basic geometry to be a sculptor, I think.
I think, like, when I hit the 15-hour mark in this game, I've been having a genuinely great time. It is a kind of a bewilderingly slow start to this game. Like, it just kind of, it does, and I kind of appreciate it that it kind of just goes, right, off you go, and you have to work it out all yourself. But at the same time, some tutorials would have helped and some more direction. Like, other Bethesda games like Fallout, Skyrim, they have very tailored opening hours or so, and they like guide you through this world and the people and everything. Whereas this one, it's like, right, you're here, now you're meeting this person, now you're meeting this person, now you're meeting this person, now go do this. Here's how you fly, here's how you store things. And I'm just like, can we just, at the same time, slow down, but at the same time, make it more exciting? I don't know if that makes any sense, but like, it, for the first like six to 8 hours of this game, I was like, oh no. Oh no, this isn't good. But now it's turned around on me a bit, and I'm having a great time. Like I said, the faction stuff and the interplay of that seems to be really good. I've joined the Freestar Collective,
who
are basically Yes, that's it means good. I'm basically Cowboy Buzz Lightyear.
I was going to ask specifically about cowboys. I've heard there are cowboys in this. Tell me about cowboys.
I'm Cowboy Buzz Lightyear. And they basically, they have my favourite settlement in the game, which is Aquila City, which is basically, the reason it's my favourite is it reminds me most of a Fallout settlement. You feel like you're in Fallout when you're there, and it's kind of a cowboy city with cool bars and museums. And like, that's the stuff I always loved in Fallout, is going into levels. I love it in any game. I'm a sucker for like a museum. Just like walking around a museum and looking at like the lore of this world. And that is one thing Bethesda always do well, is build out their worlds. And there is so much like created history and stuff like that in this game that you can get lost in it. I don't know. Do you have a favorite? You said you're also in the Freestar Collective, Jen, is that
right? Yeah.
Is it because you also wanted to be Cowboy Buzz Lightyear?
Pretty much. I mean, I was just hanging out with one of the companion characters, Sam, and he seemed like a cool guy, so I was like, oh, I'm going to try and impress you. I'm going to become...
Easily swayed.
Do you like sculpture?
The first person who says, you're cool, you're like, I'll join your faction.
Why not, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like the like fleshing out of the planets and outposts and like factions and things like that is really cool to dig into. Mm-hmm. And like a bunch of the NPCs are just great to talk to. Yeah, it's like, very detailed.
I will say that the voice acting does range from very good to abysmal. Some people I've spoken to, I'm like, what's going on here? The facial models are better compared to Bethesda games, but they still have that awkwardness. And a lot of the time they like to kind of face the other way and turn their neck towards you, which is very odd. That's been troubling
I find that
me.
Charming, though, in a way. It's like very, it's just very Bethesda. I don't know, I'm just like, this is where I am. This is what I'm doing. You know, I can't deny the fact that I'm playing a Bethesda RPG. You know, I'm spending most of my time in the menu, moving things around between inventories. And then I just meet someone and their head's like not quite attached properly. And their eyes are kind of just like looking beyond.
I wouldn't have it any other way, personally.
That's sweet Bethesda jank. I will say it's probably one of the smoothest Bethesda launches I've seen. Like, there's no, like, I've never encountered anything like game breaking or truly like progress halting. It's just like funny little stuff, like people floating in the air. Like, that will happen in space, but you know, they're floating where they shouldn't be. But you know, like, there's funny little bugs like that. But you know, it's relatively bug free for a Bethesda game. I feel like I'm sometimes shooting things and it's not connecting. But I don't want to blame me. I feel like I'm shooting right at them, but sometimes they're not connecting. But
I'm sure
who knows? It's absolutely. Yeah, I never miss. But yeah, the side quests are really where some of these shine. I think the problem is they all kind of have the same icon, and you're not sure if you're going to do a really boring fetch quest, of which there are a lot of just fetch quests in this game, but you're not sure if it's going to be like a sprawling kind of like multi-stage quest with interesting decisions. Like, have you got a favorite like side quest you've come across yet, Jen, or anything like that?
There's a lot. I mean, I find that I'm like ping-ponging between things because I'll be in the middle of like a quest line on Neon, which is one of the like main cities, which is very kind of like cyberpunky, but then there's also a lot of stinky fish drugs. They make drugs
they are
stinky fish.
Oh, what do they call them? Is it like Bass Chasm or something?
Yeah,
something
like, which I think is a cool name.
Yeah, Bass Chasm. They're all getting high off of fish, essentially. And there's this thing called Aurora. It's very odd there. Yeah, Neon's very cool. Like you said, it's like a cyberpunk city that has loads of like rival gangs. Well, not, I think there's two rival gangs to interact
with. Is it really called Neom? N-E-O-M?
Neon.
Okay. I thought it might be the Neon, like the city, the line that's being built in, I think, Saudi Arabia right now. It's also a little bit.
It's not that.
Yeah.
It's just a skincare.
It's not
brand,
that. It's Neon. But yeah, I just played it last night, a cool side quest. So I thought, like, and this is the beauty of this game, is like, for as much of just wandering around and finding nothing, you'll also just, like, I warped into a solar system and there was just this ship hanging out, and I hailed it and they were like, oh, finally someone to talk to. And it was this group of 200-year-old colonizers who had basically left Earth 200 years ago. And I boarded this ship, which had like everything they'd need to sustain themselves. And it's basically what they call like a generational ship, where basically, like, I don't know, 8 generations of these families had been like on this ship for 200 years in an effort to like relocate humanity 200 years ago. And obviously in that 200 years since, technology has like gone way into the future, and it's easy for people to just travel, so they've kind of just been living in the past for 200 years. But I got, basically, they're floating over this city called Paradiso, which is kind of just like a resort planet, which is basically just like a big fancy resort hotel on a beach. And I went down there, and basically you have the choice of whether these colonizers, do you let, so they want to basically, their mission was to go to this planet 200 years ago to recolonize Earth, but since then it's turned into this hotel resort run by some shady people. So it's like, you have the option of, do you want to send the people, the colonizers in the ship, down to this planet where they can, the owners of the hotel said they can live there, but they're basically going to be slaves. They're like, oh yeah, they can have free board and stuff, but we'll just get them to work all the time. And you're like, I'm basically going to send them down there to be slaves. Or I can help the hotel people and just blow up the ship to get rid of the problem. Or I can spend a lot of money buying, which is what I did because I'm trying to be a nice person, buy these people and you grav drive for their ship so they can go to another planet and relocate there. And that's what I did, and I got some nice rewards for it. But like, rare, like, it does happen, like there's that rare magic moment, so like, oh, I'm playing a proper Bethesda RPG here, I've got three choices and it's going to affect the outcome of this. And those are the moments where I'm like, oh, this is what I really wanted from this game. I'm basically kind of being Buzz Lightyear, Han Solo and Star Trek at the same time. But then yeah, sometimes you, and another example is I landed on this Paradiso planet and another quest was just talking to the receptionist who wanted me to go find four lost and found items on the resort. And I was just walking around picking up hotel key cards. I'm just like, how do both of these exist?
Yeah, I really like, love that you are at once the most important and least important person in the universe.
I know. I was just like, what? Like, and I get you need to have those little things. And it was good. I got 50 XP from it. But hey. I was running around this hotel going like, oh, someone like in an email reading, oh, I think I dropped my key card near the cabana on the beach. I'm just like, what am I? What's going on here? Like, the same time, Bethesda, bless them, they're kind of stuck in the past a bit. Like, this stuff we kind of got away with in Fallout, because, like, it was, you know, people loved it then, but I'm just like, couldn't you have kind of pushed some of these basic quests along a little bit, or just got rid of them?
I really felt this about Cyberpunk back in the day. Like, you know, bugs aside, I really just felt like that kind of design was something that we'd already seen, like, significantly through. And if I was already wary of this, I don't know, about 2-3 years ago at this point, I'm like, I don't know if this is for me now. Like, I might just be over it. I'm still going to check it out because it's on Game Pass, you know, easy to give it
a
go.
And that is the thing. I'm now having a really good time with it. Like, I don't think it's an amazing game, but I've now found my kind of what I'm enjoying about this game. So I know what to avoid doing. So I focus on the stuff that I think is good. Like, I'm just persuading my way through basically everything. They've kind of recycled the Oblivion dialogue system. So you can put, you basically risk how many, you have to fill up a bar. It's hard to explain. When you see it, it's very obvious. You have to fill up a bar of persuasion points. Like, say there's six you need to fill and you get three turns to pick the right dialogue option and fill up that bar. But, you know, the ones that are worth more points are a riskier option. Like, it's a really fun persuasion system, I think, although when you're talking to people kind of makes no sense. You're like,
true.
Do you want to do this for me? And they're like, no. And then you can go, I think you want to do this for me, and they're like, you know what, you're right. It's
that,
like,
is persuasion. What's... that is how that works.
Yeah, not like that's how I persuade people.
Yeah, exactly. The lock picking mini game, very fun.
Yeah,
I love lock
it's
picking.
Good, it's really, it's good. Although, like, the first time I think I accidentally, like, skipped past the tutorial of what to actually do. And as well, on PC, there's no, like, labels to anything. So you essentially have to kind of, you have, like, these digipicks with kind of prongs that you have to rotate to fit in the circular lock. So it's like a little puzzle. But you have to actually rotate them. I didn't have any, like, labels on my screen telling me what to do. So I was just like, oh, my God.
I'm just
pressing E over and over again. I was literally button mashing, like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. I have no idea what's happening. I figured it out.
Well, that is another problem with this game. I think if you do accidentally skip a tutorial, I found, like, no menus that just have, like, tutorials in, like, to look them up.
No, there's,
maybe I'm wrong.
There is a help section in the menu that just go over, like, some stuff like that, but it's not, yeah.
It's not.
Can I recommend IGN.com?
Exactly. Yeah. How to lockpick.
We have so IGN.com. Many guides. It's honestly incredible. Yeah. Like,
do you know what isn't incredible? The gunplay. Sometimes it's good. So I'm basically sticking, and it kind of fits my character, I'm sticking to pistols, which do actually feel quite good. Pistols and revolvers feel quite good. Anytime I pick up a laser weapon, I've held this genuinely in games anyway, it doesn't have that sort of like kinetics or like feel when you hit things. And like, I don't know, I'm not enjoying the gunplay too much. That's why I'm trying to talk my way out of things. But like, some of the arenas do encourage cool things. There's a good bit of verticality to a lot of them, and jetpacking over people and chucking grenades is quite fun. But yeah, I don't know how you feel about combat, and I'm trying to do as little as possible, but this game likes to force you to do quite a bit of it at the same time.
Yeah, I feel like combat is not very challenging at all. Like, I don't really feel like I'm in danger at any point. I think maybe because of the verticality and
good.
The boost pack and everything. Yeah, no, I'm just too good, that's why. 360 no scope. This sucks. Yeah, I don't know, like, you can just kind of jump over things and get out of the way pretty easily. Like, the mobility is such that you're not going to get stuck in a bad situation. I've been using like the laser rifle. I picked one up that does like bonus damage the first time you hit like an enemy at full health, you get additional damage. And then I also have like a perk on my helmet, I think it is, where you get, after you headshot someone, the next shot is a crit automatically. So I can basically just hit people in the head and they die in like two hits.
You've got
every
it
time. It's like, it was really it like, it's easy combo to do. It's nice. Not hard unless you run out of ammo and you're like, oh.
I've been trying to use a shotgun and the shotgun feels abysmal. So I've stopped using it.
Yeah,
it just doesn't feel good.
I abandoned my shotgun.
The pistols, I'd recommend people go pistols. If you want to ask me, SMG kind of feels okay, but yeah, the actual ship combat is quite cool, although I find that much tougher. If there's like more than three enemy ships, you're in a bit of trouble. I've bought a new ship, so it's quite a bit better than the one I started out with, but yeah. It's still quite difficult. But I would encourage to get the, I don't know if you've got it, the target locking system, which allows you to like individually target like the enemy shields or engines, because namely, it's cool because if you destroy the enemy's engines, it just brings them to a halt and you can then board them, and that's really cool. So you then get to board the enemy ship, shoot everyone on it, and if you want, you can just take that ship and add it to your fleet if you want, which
is
very
cool. Yeah,
there is a
fee, though. I've got to pay a fee.
There is a fee. It's like 10 grand.
So
it's a lot.
Yeah, I think it's to stop you from just like doing that and then making like a ton of money flipping ships. But
yeah,
I don't have that scanner thing, unfortunately, so I'm just like blowing everyone up, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I find
that, I am it's like, if we're all over the place, it's because this game's a bit all over the place. Like, it's hard to work out. At times, like, if I was to score it, I'm not reviewing this game, we gave it a 7. I don't think that's far off, like between a 7 and an 8. Sometimes this game feels like an 8, sometimes it feels like a 6, to be honest. But for a game, we touched on it, for a game that is so much about freedom and just like wanting you to explore, it loves nothing more than making you like play in menus. Like, you are in menus. Like, the star map is horrible.
It is.
And it requires like multiple button presses to do anything. I'm just like, can I travel to this planet? And I've got to click on it 3 times, then do like travel. Oh no, I haven't got enough fuel, so I'm gonna have to jump to another place to do it first. Feels horrible. Like, just so many systems that are badly implemented that get in the way of this being like a great game. Like, at least there is a star map, because you land on any planet and there are no maps. There are no maps for any of the cities. That must be a nightmare, but also a blessing for guides, because if we're the first to get like detailed maps of these cities out, then everyone's going to love us. But like, I just land on a planet, I'm like, oh, I just want to buy some health packs, or I want to buy a gun. I'm like, you basically have to memorize all of these cities to remember where each vendor is. It's insane.
That's got to be a... something they can fix post-launch.
I don't know. I feel like it must be a choice, though. They're like, we want you to have this feeling of getting immersed. I'm just like, but I also just want to quickly buy some ammo. Like, yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, it makes no sense why in the future, when we have, like, grav drives and ship technology, that you can't, like, look at a map. You know, we can do that now. If I want to go, like, to Morrison's, I don't know where it is. I can freaking... find it. Like, it's not hard. Like, what's happened? Why
don't I go buy some ammo right now? I know a guy.
If we in 300 years in the future, have we really lost what Google Maps was? Have we really forgotten what that was?
I'd be interested in them writing an in-law fiction reason for this. That'd be funny.
Yeah, like another annoyance is like, the shipbuilding is fun, but it doesn't really unlock until, like, for me it didn't unlock until about 18 hours in, once I actually put enough skill points into like the shipbuilding stuff to be able to unlock better parts to like play with, which is, and you're not even allowed to, you can't pilot like the higher class tier ships until you've put like a few skill points into that skill tree as well, like there's just so much like weird gatekeeping for letting you explore and have fun.
Yeah, and that's actually really important, like for like people who are going to start playing it. There's so many things that are locked behind a skill, like things that you would think are pretty like fundamental, like using a boost pack that you require a skill to do that, pickpocketing and stealth, you require the skill in order to be able to do those things. So yeah, you can kind of miss that.
Yeah, that's my big advice. If you're, I think today you can play early access, or next week if you're playing when it comes out properly, like almost, it sounds really boring, but plan ahead where you want to put your skill points, because like you get one per level at the start, you're getting those fairly regularly, like you'll go up the first 10 levels pretty quickly, but from there on it's a bit slower. It's like plan out where you want to put these skill points. Like if you want to be a persuasive person, put them all in that. If you want to be a shipbuilder, put them all in that. Like, but that will mean that it just stops you, like, so I've put all my points into persuasion and into shipbuilding. But it's like, if I now want to build an outpost, I'm like, well, I can't really build a cool one. I'm going to have to now wait another 10 hours if I want to try that out properly, which is weird.
Yeah. But I mean, you can do the basic stuff, but then there's additional things you need to unlock.
I want the advanced stuff,
I know,
though.
I know.
I'm an advanced person. let's go on to the, for all the fun this game is, let's go on to its biggest crime, which I think we can both agree, Jen. When I say the word inventory management to you, what horrors come up?
Oh my god. Oh, it's so sad. I don't know, like just the fact that when you open like a container, like in your ship or your companion's inventory, you can't see your own inventory. You have to swap between your
so
inventory
weird.
And that,
because Fallout has this, why doesn't this,
like, what, I don't know.
At Todd, baffled. What's going on?
And I have a
it's
memory,
like a
so what I've got.
It's like a constant like circus act of like balancing like cargo and personal inventories and like companion inventories. Like there is such a limited space, like for a game that encourages you to like collect everything. Like
just
I've just been flying around like collecting things in my ship, and I'm like, oh no, your cargo hold is full. I'm like, what? I've got a massive ship. Why can't I put more on it?
I've given up. I mean, I think you can just like throw stuff on the floor. You can throw stuff on the floor in the ship.
Could.
So yeah, you know, you can do that. But yeah, it's super frustrating. Like at the start of the game, I was like, okay, I'm going to collect all these resources. I'm going to pick up everything that I see around me, and you know, I can sell it. And have loads of stuff, but
that is one thing that can hopefully be easily patched is a better inventory system. Like hopefully within, I don't know, a few months we get that, because it is so bad to play with. And yeah, like despite all these gripes, there is like still some of that Bethesda RPG magic that shines through like every now and then. Like even over, like I've just been walking through, I think it was Neon last night, I was just walking through and you just overhear conversations of someone like, oh, this person's been doing this, and it would just pop up with an objective like, oh, you should talk to find this person. Like there is like discovery in these cities, like that just like you overhear like conversations in coffee shops and it'll like trigger like sprawling quests of like, you thought it'd just be a fetch quest, but no, this is like a few hours long, this like path you're going down. Or like you'll, like I found one note on a body, just a random like soldier I killed in a like a space station, that led me to like a whole, they were like, oh, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity you'll never want to miss out on this star system. And it's like, I could never have killed that person, I could never have picked up that note, and I'd never would have found this whole quest. Like it's those things, those moments where it makes you feel like you're playing something that no one else is playing and no one else is going to get. Those are the moments where it really does feel amazing. And like, I wish it was more consistently like that and just less frustrating. But I am having a good time with it at the moment. I want to see where the story goes. I want to see how the faction interplay turns out. I've been told, like, after you finish the main quest, like, some major, like, I don't, it almost changes the game to an extent. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
But yeah, I'm, for all the annoyances I have with this game, there is still a lot of magic to it, I think, and I'm not going to stop playing anytime soon. I do need to finish Baldur's Gate, which is annoying me. But yeah, I want to get back to Baldur's Gate, especially now they've patched it. But
me too.
God, there's just too much to play.
Yeah, I've like forced myself to stop playing Baldur's Gate to play Starfield. And I, poor me, what terrible,
terrible what a life we live.
Boo-hoo. Yeah. But I've been missing it. But
I mean, that is the problem a lot of people are going to have, isn't it? When you're going from arguably the best RPG ever made to
a pretty good one.
Like,
it's good. Yeah. It's fun. I mean, I think that the biggest thing for me is just getting to grips with all of these systems, which are not very intuitive and are, frustrating, but overcomplicated.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've learned how to navigate the star map, like now that I've learned how to do ship combat and scan things without accidentally getting up out of my seat and walking away from the cockpit in the middle of the battle, like that happened so many times that I nearly got up and walked away from my computer in the same way. But yeah, now that I've got through that and I know kind of what I'm dealing with, it's much less irritating. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I can focus on like just roaming around, having a good time exploring.
I'm having a good time with it now, and I hope it continues on this trajectory, because then I'll end up really liking this game. I think it's just didn't make the best first impression, but I got over the hump, and that's why it's always a very annoying thing to say, and we even say it, Dan Stobson says in our review, like, loathe to tell people after 15 hours it gets good. It's like, but truthfully, it kind of does. So yeah, if you've got 10 to 15 hours of mediocre to frustrating game to sit through,
can you even shove on a podcast during that time? Like, or do you actually have to pay attention to?
You need to pay attention, because it doesn't tell you enough. So you definitely need to pay attention to what little it tells you. But yeah, I just had a really cool story moment. So it's what there are things worth getting to. So yeah, if you're playing Starfield, let us know what you think. IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. We'll definitely be talking about this game again. I think I don't think this will just be going away anytime.
You've also tipped me off on another thing I want some emails about, because
that
feeling about there being too many games to play. I've been thinking about how, like, on another year, Armored Core 6 might be the best game of the year, and I don't even think I'm going to get time to play it.
I won't have time this year. I know that much.
So I think it's like the question I want to ask the audience is like, what are you not playing? Like, what's the thing that you'd love to but you just can't?
Yeah, Armored Core would be one I'd like to check out. I know I'm not gonna have time.
Mm-hmm.
My current plan is Starfield, then the finish Starfield and Baldur's Gate, then Cyberpunk. I think I'm gonna have to give Assassins a skip for now. And then, because then we've got the Spider-Man Alan Wake double coming up in October. So, Lies of P as well. Is it Lords of Fallen soon as well?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my God. Mortal Kombat will probably play a bit of.
I think that's January, isn't it?
September, I think.
What's that in January? Whatever.
Final Fantasy, I think, might be January. Oh, there's too many games.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, Leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
But you know what, when you're not playing games, why not watch some Netflix?
Yeah. Why not watch 8 hours of television in your already packed schedule?
Matt, you've done the Lord's work here. You've, again, for us, watched a Netflix live action adaptation of an anime series.
Yeah.
One Piece. Is it any good?
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay. Yeah. There we go.
Which I think is a great, like, good testament of its quality. Like, it just being all right is quite a step ahead of everybody's expectations. The Cowboy Bebop one I was really excited about, but just didn't quite find its footing. It made like quite a few, it basically just didn't fundamentally understand what was interesting about Cowboy Bebop, and I just didn't quite capture the magic. And I think that like the One Piece adaptation is really good at figuring out what things it definitely needs to have in it. But that doesn't necessarily make it a very good TV show. I think a great adaptation, really good chance, but also it's like, I don't know, it's fine.
Could you honestly recommend this to someone who has no interest in One Piece? Or would you still say just watch the anime?
So yeah, genuinely difficult call, because like the anime suffers from it being made in the like late 90s, and a lot of things that we would have expected from it at that point are like kind of not to our tastes now. A lot of like anime that's being produced right now, you know, in the year 2023, stunning visual, like moves really quick, like great pace to it. And this doesn't really have it in its early episodes. And so this is quite good at condensing all of the material down to a really digestible form, but it loses a lot of the heart along the way, like a lot of the fun, a lot of the goofiness, I'd say. Before I continue this, though, I should probably get a little bit of a feeling. You and I have talked about One Piece before, Simon, but Jenny, you got any familiarity at all?
Oh, I mean, I've heard lots of really good things about One Piece, but it's too daunting for me to consider watching. I think I maybe watched a couple of episodes like a while back, but just the sheer number of episodes that this show has, I'm like, I can't begin to try.
I think it's really telling that so many people got into it over the lockdowns, because it's like, well, yeah, I can finally watch 1,000 episodes of television. Nothing's stopping me now.
Christ. I'm not going to check. I have made my anime first steps into my anime journey, though, because I'm three whole episodes into Evangelion. I'm very much enjoying it. I want more Pen. That's my only takeaway.
Yeah, Pen rules. I really love that it is just like hanging out in Masato's apartment as well for a lot of the show. Like it is great.
Love it. But anyway, One Piece, like,
so
is it good?
Yeah, it adapts about the first like 44 episodes, but it does draw some stuff from later in the series and decides to pluck it in there. And it's actually like a really good change, because so much of the anime and the manga are about this really interconnected world and a lot of people that keep reoccurring. But that doesn't happen in the early stuff. So moving all of that forward means that you get a sense of how this world works a little bit better. There's like a character in this that appears in the first episode that doesn't appear again for another 300 episodes in the anime. And they've decided to just like make him like way more of a main character in this series. And I think it's like actually a really good choice. Like it means that you see their journey rather than actually just get told about what's happening.
Are the effects any good? Do they do the big structure?
Yeah, like I was really worried about that, but I didn't like cringe at any of it at any point, which is a good sign. I think, you know, if you're going to spend $200 million estimated on this, you better get a show specifically about a rubber man. You better make the rubber man look pretty good.
Yeah. Like, does it end in a way like, are they going to make more of this? They're so famed at the moment for just making one, especially if they're anime shows, just making one series and done. Like, does it leave it on like a cliffhanger, or is it?
It does. End it in a way? Yeah. So it's a really faithful adaptation of those first like 44 episodes, and it's really clear what they'll go on to do next. I was convinced that they were going to skip a thing entirely and just move on to something else, but something that they don't do at the end of this, they will clearly do at the beginning of the next season, which it would be part of this arc, but I think they've just decided to have it like hang over. I think the problem is only timing of when this is released. Like, you know, you can't write any episodes and you can't film it anytime soon because of both strikes.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a real problem of getting everybody that was involved in this like to actually sign on for another season when they don't know what is actually around the corner. Yeah. I think most of the cast is also really good. I think the Emily Ryder's Nami and I think it's Joseph Gibson as Usopp is really good. Mukenyu doesn't quite get it. He's really cool. But I think that Zoro is like kind of got a goofy edge that he doesn't quite find. And Naki Godoy as Luffy is like mostly fine, but he's just not as silly. It just doesn't. It's a really silly show.
Is he too earnest?
Yeah, it just, I don't know, it's not exactly right in tone. He's mostly there. Like, you're not offended by his portrayal, but it just doesn't quite get it. I also think that, like, one of the episodes, I think they could completely cut. I think they could condense it down to a previous one. And some of Zoro's backstory stuff is just so much less interesting. But the Sanji stuff's really good. I think that Tazcal is really good in this portrayal as well. And I think that's about it.
Yeah.
I think it's
I'm
going
to level with you, Matt. I'm not going to watch it.
Okay.
Like, it would have to be like something people are raving about, I think, for me to go, yeah, I'll check this out. Like, if I look at it, I'm like, this isn't working for me.
It is absolutely young adult television through and through.
I'm just not a young adult anymore, sadly. Mm-hmm.
Also, like, it was something that I knew would be a problem of this, but it's best stuff. Like, One Piece's best things don't happen in this season. That is quite a little bit of a ways in. You might get some of the really, really good stuff next season. You might get some of those in, like, 7 seasons from now. And if they're only adapting 44 episodes in a season, and there are 1,000 episodes, you could have 20 seasons and change.
Yeah, if this gets a second season, I'll be surprised because that's just how Netflix works. But, you know, I hope for your sake that they do because, you know, there's promise there for you and I want you to be happy.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes, please.
Awesome. Yes, good. There we go. Yeah.
Just watch the anime, mate. It's good.
I don't have time.
Yeah.
Do you see how many games are coming out? I don't have time to watch it.
There must be an edit. Like a fan edit.
There is. We won't talk about it on this one because you have to use a torrent to download it. But there is. They're out there.
Lovely. I'm going to briefly talk about some of the games I couldn't talk about at Gamescom because I hadn't seen them yet when we recorded the podcast last week. I just want to mention a few. It's kind of like an indie roundup. The Plucky Squire is one people may have heard
of already. Very excited for it.
I've watched, I didn't get to play this one, unfortunately, but I did watch a whole half an hour level of this game. It does look delightful. If you don't know what this game is, it is a 2D, 3D kind of like action. Is it in the platform? Not really. Action game that kind of is heavily inspired by A Link Between Worlds. Has a bit of that Super Mario Odyssey vibe to it as well, where you kind of, you're playing as Jot, who is a character in a storybook, who is basically the villain of this storybook is annoyed that Jot is the protagonist, so he's doing what he can to get rid of Jot and become the lead character of this story. And through magical means, he can also jump outside of the storybook into a 3D world, which is basically the desk that this book is drawn on. And it's just, I've only seen a bit of it, but it's just one, if you haven't seen before, to keep on your radar, I think, because it's very cute. Has that sort of aura of Toy Story to it, which I'm a sucker for, just because I love Toy Story so much. I mean, we already talked about me playing with Buzz Lightyear in Starfield, so you can tell that. But also that sort of It Takes Two vibe of, like, things are just, when you play with scale like that, things are cool. When you're like a little person in a normal world, like the size of...
Reminds me of a PC game that I played once, and I just tried to look up the name of it, but I can't. It's about, like, you're playing an RPG, but you're also playing, like, every version of that RPG. So if you move from one space to another, you'll go from 2D to 3D, and if you go back to 2D, it means that you can fit through gaps that you otherwise couldn't. I really can't remember the name of this. Oh, it was really good.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
The Plucky Squire is very cool. It's co-directed by someone who was the art director of Pokemon Sword and Shield, so it has a really they kind of play with their, like, there's a section in this game that also they bring like other gameplay elements in besides just the standard like sword action. And there's a little like turn-based thing on like a, that looked like a magic card that was basically just a Pokemon battle, which was very cool. Like,
very cool.
I think it's going to be a very playful game.
Who's publishing? Is it Devolver?
It's Devolver. Right. It's a Devolver game. It just looks very, very nice and I can't wait. It just looks delightful. I walked out of my demo for that going, that is delightful. And yeah, I would definitely be playing the Plucky Squire when it comes out. A few others I want to quickly mention. Thank Goodness You're Here is a game that was revealed at ONL. It was the one that was basically, it's like the Beano in a northern British town.
Yeah, I think it's Yorkshire specifically, I think.
Yeah, yeah, a town called Barnsworth. I played 15 minutes of this. It's very silly. It's kind of, they call it a, was it a slap former, I think?
I haven't heard that. That's really good.
Like a slapstick platformer. Like, it's, you're kind of just walking around. Like, you can only, the bit I played, you could only, there was only a jump button and a hit button. And you're basically playing as this weird salesman who's arrived in this northern British weird town. It's kind of like a Beano version of the League of Gentlemen in a way. But there's some like sinister undertones, but nothing that dark. But like, I went to the butcher's and got some meat for a big pie that eventually blew up the pie shop. And like, there's just weird characters with really over the top accents. And just, it's a very silly game. If you're looking for silly game,
it was very funny as well watching it on ONL for work and hearing the voice of friend of the show, Log, who used to work for OXM back in the day.
Is he in it?
Yeah, he's Big Ron's meat pies.
I talked to him.
This is familiar. Yeah.
There's a lot of just very silly and funny voices in that game. So I don't know when it's coming out. I think it's a little bit of way off, but thank goodness you're here. Keep your eyes on that if you want something that looks just very, very silly. Harold Halibut is a game that's been in production for almost 10 years, I think. If you've never seen what this game looks like, it is stunning. Like, yeah, I played like half an hour of this. It's a stop motion game, which you just don't get. Like, so it's full, like,
the thing I want to know though is that, like, have they done the animation walk cycles in stop motion, or have they 3D?
I think they have
there?
Yeah, so they had some of the models in the room when I was playing it, and I got to look at them properly close up. They're like incredible stop motion, like, animation models. So yeah, I think they filmed them walking on a green screen and then obviously added animation in the game to that. But like, the actual sets, everything, like, is handmade. It just looks unbelievable. The game itself is, they said, like a 15 hour or so narrative game. There's no like puzzles or combat or anything. I think you're basically playing a 15 hour Wes Anderson film, really, is what they were inspired by mostly. And it does have that vibe. It has that sort of Life Aquatic, almost meets Grim Fandango sort of tone, just without the puzzles. It was just, yeah, very cool. It's also got that, it's about a man called Harold who, in the Cold War, so in the 60s or 70s, basically escaped by making a spaceship that is also kind of a floating city, and you're finding off to alien worlds. I didn't see much of the story. I don't know what's going on, but I like the vibe a lot. And yeah, Harold Halibut, if you've not kept your eyes on that one, is one to look out for if you're looking for a stop motion game. And finally, I played a bit of Hellskate, which is basically Hades mixed with Tony Hawk. The lead character is called Anton Falcon. You can see what they're doing here. It's a very, it's very tongue-in-cheek. It's made by an ex-developer on Tony Hawk Underground. And basically, he just, I think, wants to bring skating back to where it was fun. Like, yeah, I think he bemoaned a little bit that Activision kind of drove that series into the ground by making bad game after bad game. So this is kind of, it's a roguelike, so it's got all the Tony, if like I picked it up and I instantly could play it, it has all the Tony Hawk controls. I was just doing manual combos.
Yeah.
I was doing it straight away to get the combos. And it's that mixed with Hades, so you've also got a heavy and light attack as well as projectile attacks, and you're just going through these skate levels, defeating bosses, going to the next one. And it's just a cool little blend of an action roguelike and Tony Hawk. So yeah, that's enough one to just keep on your radar. This is the keep on your radar section. So Hellskate. Yeah. Hellskate with one L.
We will put all of these in the episode description so you can look them up yourselves. You especially should, because they all look visually fascinating.
They are all quite good, I would say. Do you know what else is quite good?
Yeah, how good are both of you? We're going to find out in the upcoming segment. It's the return of the Endless Starch.
Woo! Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? Matt, this is the first time Jen's played the Endless Search.
It is.
And she looks absolutely terrified, frankly.
Yeah, quaking.
You're in for a treat. It's an Endless Starch. It's the best version of this game. As far as I'm concerned, I want this every week. If you've got submissions for games that we should play, you can email us in.
Do you know how this particular game works, Jen?
Give me a quick rundown.
Of course. So game names often will sound very different if you remove a letter or put a different letter in its place. If I give you a description for a game, you have to tell me what that game name is with a strange letter that is somewhat out of place.
Mm-hmm. So the example I always say is, you know, the clue would be an open world Florida city overrun with mice or overrun with rodents, and it would be GTA Mice City, not GTA Vice City.
Mm-hmm. Getcha.
And sometimes the game might
People must be so bored of me saying that. I've said that so many times, but it's my go-to, so I'm sorry.
The game might be easy to tell, but it's the flip that is the difficult part. Some of these are definitely true.
I believe we've had this one's been sent in as well.
It has. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we're going to do... How many of these have we got? We've got seven. So there's one more than we need for a tie
Thank
break.
You, no, Elliot. Yeah. These are your questions. Thank you. So if they're bad, we're also going to blame you, but thank you.
Elliot's fault. I'm sure they're good. All right. So this first one. A psychotic AI lets you know that yes... they finally have PS5s back in store.
System stock.
That's really good. Are you sure you didn't check these out before?
I didn't. I don't often play this game, and I'm one of these people that I have a weird brain for these things.
This is not boding well for me. I was still processing. Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
All right. Winston, Tracer and co. put aside their differences and stop shooting up various global monuments to keep an eye on the souffle they're preparing.
Oh.
You know what game it is?
Oven Watch?
Yeah!
Oh my god, I did it!
I was trying to change the W to like over batch or something.
That's good.
You can make a batch. That's like another word for a roll, isn't it, in other parts of the country? I don't know.
All right. This one's really good.
It's your point.
All right. Battle through hell as successful San Francisco banker Johnny, slay demons, your deceptive fiance and former best friend, rip and tearing me apart, Lisa.
What? There's a lot of things going on there.
I can do it once more if you need it.
Say it again, please.
Battle through hell as successful San Francisco banker Johnny, slay demons, your deceptive fiancé.
Room Eternal.
It is, absolutely. It's just Room.
Oh, is it just Room?
It was just Room, but Room Eternal I'll take.
Okay.
All right. I love that, because it's like, it is the title of the movie, too. That's what tripped me up initially. Okay. Time only moves when you move. No regenerating health bars. No conveniently placed ammo. It's you, outnumbered and outgunned, except for your delightful headgear.
Super hat?
Yeah, super hat. I like that one because it kind of tags on the thing right at the end.
They're all good ones, and it's not just because I'm getting them.
I'm actually... Okay, the spelling of this one's a little bit odd. You might get it. An adorable sword-wielding fox searches for clues, solves puzzles, and deciphers lore, whilst having to deal with drunken Oktoberfest revelers.
Are they just trying to say Munich?
Yes, Munich. Yeah, which is not, I don't think it's how you spell Munich.
There's another letter in there.
Yeah. I think, Cardi, you've won this, but let's keep playing because there's two more.
Let's have fun.
This one, okay. No, I'm not going to read that one out because it's too rude. You won't get that out of me, unfortunately. Well, I'll tell you after the show, but it's a little bit blue for my tastes.
A little bit blue.
Yeah. All right. Night City's basketball team.
Jen would have got that one, definitely.
Night City's basketball team are desperate for a new power forward. Could your character V be it? Could they take home the championship? Will arms fitted with mantis blades ever get past anti-doping taking that from the top. Night City's basketball team are desperate for a new power forward. Could your character be it? Could they take home the championship? Will arms fitted with mantis blades ever get past anti-doping regulations?
Cyberdunk.
Yeah, you got it. Nice one. Well, okay. Cardi, you wrap that one up. But Jen, very good showing.
I'm going to look on the doc now and see what the blue one was.
Yep.
It was good fun. Mm-hmm. It was good fun. I enjoyed that.
GG.
Who's got the first email? Oh, it's me. I've got one here from Joachim Thiessen, who says, "Hello, gents and ladies of the IGN UK. Long time, etc. This spring, I clicked play on Double Fine Adventure, and 4,003 hours later, I had watched both it and Psych Odyssey, and I'm thirsting for more of these well-made production diaries behind-the-scenes docs. What I loved was how they both felt really personal and also didn't hold back when it came to the more technical, nitty-gritty stuff, sparking a renewed interest in PC gaming for me, having been a console gamer for most of my adult life. I went back to Disco Elysium on computer and not on my PC5. PS5? And was so glad I did, as I was enraptured by it and finished it in 3 days. My question for you is, do you have any recommendations for any well-made game production diaries, recent or older? It doesn't matter. This is just nice things now.
You have to read it. You have to blush.
Oh, no. Your podcast is great. I'm just going to paraphrase it. Thank you, from Norway. Any good
video game out of the way that we do produce these in-house.
We've done some good ones.
Very good ones recently about the production of the PS1.
I like that one.
Dale did a really good inside story about the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack that I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I can think of some other ones, but they're
we've done some older ones. I did one on, it's less in depth, it's Dead Island 2. Matt and Dale did a good one on Rainbow Six Siege and the journey of that game, which is really good.
But I will give a shout out to Danny O'Dwyer's recent video about the production of Vampire Survivors. He got a puppet for it. It's really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I really like the God of War one that PlayStation did called Birth in Kratos, which is all about bringing Kratos back. It's following the path of the 2018 God of War game. It's really good. And not just because I'm in it for 3 seconds either. You see the back of my head. That's the real reason it's good. But I really like that one. I don't know. Do you have any, Jen?
None that I come to mind. My mind is just full of Starfield. When I was trying to fall asleep last night, I was in Starfield's photo mode, panning around. I've lost my mind.
Jenna's lost their mind. Yeah. You will have to read an email soon, though, so if you can regain some sort of cognition before then, that's good.
Oh, I'm just remembering as well, it's a horrendous amount of time to invest into something like this, but Noah Caldwell-Gervais has just put out a 10-hour video on the history of the Fallout series that breaks it out game by game, so you don't have to watch it all at once, but 10 hours, mate.
I do think better game docs have been made since, but the original, the indie game doc that had Phil Fish making Fez,
you know,
and Jonathan Blow doing The Witness.
Right?
Are you?
I'm in that movie.
Well, there we go. I remember watching it, must have been over 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good back there, especially if you were like me, very excited for The Witness. But yeah, that's still worth watching. It's not about the making of games, but still, King of Kong is one of the best documentaries ever made. If you've never watched King of Kong about the competitive Donkey Kong players, then absolutely watch that. It's amazing. Matt, what next email have we got?
Thanks, Cardi. I'd love to read out this one from Mark Shaw, who says, Hello, IGN UK crew. I write to you on the subject of annoying occurrences in movie theatres that have spoiled viewing experience. More specifically, I write immediately after listening to the experience of the listener who had Dunkirk spoiled by the coughing old man. I hate it. I think I've definitely told my story about being disrupted in a movie theater before, so I won't do it again now. I went to see Darkest Hour, the Gary Oldman Churchill biopic. This is such a good story, by the way. Went to see Darkest Hour with my partner. We were in a small theater with about a half dozen other people. Two people walked in, a young woman and an older man who I initially assumed was her father. They sat directly behind us. Almost immediately we noticed that every time the older man offered the young woman snacks, her inevitable response was, "Thank you, Daddy." Her tone was such that I suspected that they were not father and daughter. While their relationship was none of my business, the "Thank you, Daddy" refrain occurred often enough to completely derail my focus on the Battle of Britain. Anyway, thank you, IGN UK daddies.
Oh, it's okay.
For the great content. Kind regards, Mark.
Wow.
How many times did they offer? Like, imagine hearing that every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dad. No, I'm not going to say it.
You did. I heard you.
They've got the clip now.
I got halfway through. Yeah. Just thank you, Dad.
That's a good bit of fun. Well, more power to them.
Wow.
Yeah, why? I mean, why not? I mean,
polite. You know,
if everyone's having fun.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with manners.
Mm.
Just not at all.
Yeah, especially when you're watching Gary Oldman's Churchill pop in The Darkest Hour. Oh, dear. Jen, we've got one last email.
We do. Here. Yes, it's from Rowan Dunford, who says, "Love hearing you all talk games and film, but interested in what you have been listening to lately. I've been in a musical rut lately, mostly listening to stuff I loved in high school. Would love any recommendations. Cheers and much love from New Zealand. P.S. Go the mighty All Blacks."
I'm not sure about that. We're going on a rare music tangent. Why not? We don't talk about music at all. I listen to Jen's music all the time.
You don't have to lie.
You do make music.
I make music, yeah, I do, under the name Sylph.
There we go.
But I don't listen. Check, well, I do listen out. To my own music, I guess, when I'm writing it, but not like.
I mean, yeah, it'd be weird if you didn't. You'd have to.
Listen to my music. I'm gonna plug myself.
Everyone listen to Sylph. No. What have you been listening to, Matt? I'm sorry, as a man of an eclectic taste.
I'm looking through my Spotify liked songs, and the only one that really I absolutely have to talk about is "My Barn, My Rules" by Horse Girl. It's the best
that
song.
That can't be real.
You're familiar with Horse Girl, Jen?
No, but I must find out more.
It's just like a bullshit dance house track by a girl that wears a horse mask live. I think she's like normally a DJ.
I'm trying to think. I'm looking through my recently played. What have I got? I've been listening to a lot of Australian punk/hardcore/melodic hardcore, if you want to call it that, band called Trophy Eyes. They're very good at the moment. I'm going to bring this up. I'm going to have to bring it up now. Oh, actually, Olivia Rodrigo's new single, Bad Idea, right? Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I got assaulted, frankly, verbally assaulted by other members of the IGN UK podcast. None that are here, I may add. The people that have not shown their face today. As we were leaving Cologne Airport last week, they were playing some ABBA in the airport. And I sat there and went, I love a bit of ABBA. I think ABBA are great. And I got absolutely hounded, basically, by other people saying, why would you ever choose to put ABBA on? They're a novelty band. Other just slurs, frankly, that I couldn't handle.
Damn.
So, yeah, I've been listening to quite a bit of ABBA the last few days. And let me tell you, SOS was always my favourite ABBA song. Last few days, I can't stop listening to Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
Yeah.
God, it's good.
Have you given us exit music for this podcast?
I think we will be playing Gimme, Gimme, Gimme at the end of this podcast.
I've always said that I don't understand how Mamma Mia is as popular as it is with its like traditional demographic, because it's technically like a classic rock song. It's got like a specific kind of drum beat and guitar solo that like isn't really the reputation that it has. I think it's a great track.
It's amazing. Waterloo's my they are one of the biggest selling out artists of all time. I'm not gonna go over this again.
I'm a fan. Yeah. I went to see ABBA Voyage.
I'm so jealous. I haven't. Good. Is it amazing?
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's freaky. Like, it mm-hmm. really does seem like they're.
I might go.
I'm basically I'm doxing myself as I say this, but outside Leytonstone Station, they've got a poster for the ABBA Voyage, but they've given everybody Joker makeup. They've just graffitied it, which I've just shared in our Slack channel now that you can see. And it might be the episode art. Why not? It should be Starfield, but I'd prefer it was this.
I think it'll probably be Starfield. God, that's horrific. Yep. Anyway, we had a bit of a voyage this podcast, didn't we? We set off for the stars, and do you know what? We had some fun along the way. And we all came back in one piece. I should write poetry.
This is my last episode. I'm never doing this again.
I wasn't thinking maybe I should be a songwriter. I have no musical inclinations whatsoever, but why not?
All the best songwriters don't know how to write music. So. Yeah.
Apart from Jen, who's great at it.
Yeah.
But there we go. Should we listen to some ABBA and go have some lunch?
I love that it's not the Starfield theme. It's not even the One Piece theme.
No, we're going gimme. We're going gimme, and that's what's happened. So, yeah.
All right,
have a lovely time with Starfield, everyone, if you're going to play it.
And you know what? Watch the One Piece anime.
Yeah, you can try that as well. Okay. Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye-bye. It's not a song.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that. As well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.